Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, diving into some running back survivors from the NFL draft. So there's a handful of them, and I think the biggest one, I mean, it's Mike Davis, man. This is a huge situation for Mike Davis. I do think that it's fairly likely in some way, shape, or form that they address the position. Whether that is in trade, whether that is an August cut, whether that's Kerryon Johnson just got cut today, and any of those scenarios I think are very possible. But as we stand here right now, he dodged a Najee Harris bullet, he dodged a Travis Etienne bullet, he dodged a Javonte Williams bullet, and he dodged a Trey Sermon bullet. So at this point, it's essentially him and Kadre Allison, which when you think about that, it's pretty wild that his career arc, I mean, basically, essentially, if you remember, he ended up in Chicago. And that was supposed to be like a 1-2 punch. And he essentially, they cut him before whatever the deadline is for contracts to count against the cap. The compensatory pick, I think it's week 8, maybe week 10, 12, something like that. They cut him before that, so he wouldn't count against their compensatory pick formula. That was like 2 years ago. And now he's basically a one warp guy, essentially, last year. And now I couldn't sell him for a third to a contender. I couldn't send him to a second for a contender. And fast forward, like, thank goodness. Like, I'm not saying I would have had to stick and pick with that pick, but I mean, there's nothing in this draft that at this point presents the upside where some of the picks were. I mean, thirds, like multiple thirds for him. And I was just like, you know what? If he's back, like, he's not going to be in a worse situation. And, you know, that's pretty much where we're not. I think his profile is pretty interesting in terms of some of the cost stuff. Him for 205. I'm just going down some of the Analytics of Dynasty trades from the past few days here. So him and Gronkowski for 209 and 308. Again, give me the vets. He's basically in a package with Myles Gaskin and a future second for Austin Eckler, another one for 205. Him and Brian Hill and a future second for J.D. McKissic and Devin Singletary. He's probably the best player in that draft and that trade. Him for Tyrod Taylor and Antonio Gandy-Golden. These are things that happened since the NFL draft. Rashad Penny for a 2022 second. That second cost is interesting. That's basically, it's kind of just kicking the can. I tend to think he probably presents a little bit more upside, but I get the idea of kicking the can down the line here. So some more of them here, Mike Davis for 211 for Juju Smith-Schuster. Mike Davis, Robert Tonyan, 104 and a third for 102. So that's basically to move up. Depending on what you're doing there, what you're taking, I'm pseudo interested in sort of that Ross, that what that pick, what that construction would have been. Let's see here, 101 and Mike Davis for Dak. He's basically a move-up piece from 110 to 109. I mean, these are all trades. This is a starting running back for the Atlanta Falcons. Mike Davis, 208 for 203. All that's to say, I think he's still a buy. If you can buy him for a second in this class, do it. Like, do it, would be my thought. I think you should be able to get a future first for him. you're not at this point, but like, that's kind of the cash out. You know, if you want to get a second, maybe a player, and if you want to get a second in another human hand grenade type profile, that's fine. But all of these trades, I'm on the Davis side. And again, maybe I'm blinded by the light. But I mean, him for Darrington Evans, like, what are you hoping to accomplish from that deal? What are you hoping to accomplish? You're hoping to accomplish exactly what Mike Davis has become. And there's no visible sign of that actually happening. So, I mean, all of the deals, I'm on the Mike Davis side. When you consider it from a, from basically like a player perspective, if you want to move up to like 102, or if you want to combine 101 and Dak, or 101 and Mike Davis for Dak, like those things, I think are, that's kind of what you want to do. For me, I think you want to move Mike Davis to figure out a core asset. And I'm working on a theory. It's probably going to be a later this week project. And I really want to sit down and sort of look at it, because I think it's going to be a strategy in 2022. For the NLX Dynasty, I'll keep you updated on it. But really thinking about the segments of your team, and whether that's, you know, down the line, right? Basically the kind of week to week contributors that you're looking for, and then it's kind of like the yearly contributors you're looking for, and then it's really your core assets. And what does that mean? You know, a core asset basically being, I want to look at how to actually define it. And then sort of, you know, see where those pieces come from. But if you can get a future first, like, that's moving what's probably a contributor for a year into being a potential multi-year asset. And, you know, basically like kind of multiple hits over the next 4 years type of scenario. And like, I wouldn't necessarily rule that out for Mike Davis either. So again, I think a second is probably selling low. I was looking at some of the stats. He ranked pretty low in terms of, like, when you break down some of his like yards over expectation stuff, when you look at his expected yards, he ranked pretty low in the league. 50th in yards expected out of 55 qualifiers over at Next Gen Stats. When you turn it into a hyper-efficient offense like Arthur Smith oversaw in Tennessee, I think he, you know, Derrick Henry saw much better in terms of expectation. And you sort of add that all up, I think he's got some really interesting upside, and not a ton to threaten him either. I just don't see, unless it's a carry-on, unless it's a, you know, maybe Ronald Jones. I'm just trying to think of guys that are out there that could potentially be a threat. Those are the types, and but outside, and none of those I don't think are going to sort of just blow him out of the water in terms of talent. And I don't think they're a team that's really going to trade for anyone either. So I think all that stuff's really interesting. So I'm pretty strongly on the Mike Davis bandwagon after the NFL draft. The other player that really has, or one other player that's really stuck out to me, is when you look at, when you actually go and look at Damien Harris. And so Damien Harris for me was, I was a little conflicted on him. I didn't know exactly what to do with him. You know, is he a package up piece? At the same time, it's a scenario where what are you going to do better than him, right? If you're not getting one of the top four running backs in this class, you know, we could talk about, you know, maybe moving from running back to receiver. But if you're giving him for a pick that isn't going to net you one of the top four running backs, you're not doing better at the running back position. And I sort of get that there's some concerns about his upside, all that stuff. Well, I was actually diving into some of the stuff for New England. And it seems like a weird situation to say, hey, you know, this is a beneficiary from the, you know, from the draft, because they weren't really expected to draft anyone. However, when I sort of look at the, when I look at the, some of the stats there from New England last year, they were amongst the most run heavy teams in the NFL in terms of quarterback runs in the red zone. And that's all Cam Newton. So when you look at their plays basically inside the 20, they ran on 70% of them, the Patriots did last year. It's by far the most in the league. And then when you sort of, when you break it down a little bit, like, oh, all right, that's a pretty good situation for the running back, you know, running a lot down there, that can really help a running back. So of their 97 rushing attempts, 44 of them were quarterback rushes, and 53 of them were non-quarterback rushes. So I basically just, you know, if that might be receivers or whatever, you know, fullbacks, I just categorize quarterback runs versus non-quarterback runs. 45% of their runs in the inside the 20 were by the quarterback. That's by far the first in the league. So that's just by far the number one in the league in terms of that stat. That's just incredible. So of the plays that they had in the red zone, total plays in the red zone, 32, just short of 32% of them were quarterback runs. When you look at the rest of the position, so Baltimore ranked second and they were at 20th. And then when you sort of keep going down the line, basically the 10th is down at 11%. So they were just short of three times more likely to run their quarterback in the red zone than the 10th most quarterback run friendly team was. And that was actually Carolina. So I think if you sort of, I'm not going to say that goes to zero. You know, if you sort of look down at like, for example, 20th in the league is about 5%, just to sort of give you an idea of where these teams rank. Yeah, you know, you go all the way down. San Francisco ranked basically, they had one rush. They had one rush in the red zone. They had basically 70 rushes down there. One rush was from the quarterback. So that figures to change as well. That figures to change as well. But even Indianapolis with with Philip Rivers, and probably I would have to go back and look, but I would guess that's Jacoby Brissett rushing the three times. But like they ranked better than San Francisco did. Jacksonville ranked better than San Francisco did. So that's all to say, I think that there is a significant usage difference that's going to happen in terms of the rushing, and I think that that's Mac Jones related. Is that this year we'll see how soon that happens in terms of the transition, but that makes me bullish on Damian Harris because I think that there's touchdown upside there. Other things that make me bullish on Damian Harris that have happened in the past basically 48 hours, Sony Michel not going to receive his fifth year option is not going to be picked up, so he'll be a free agent in the offseason. And I was reading something today from Mike Reese out of he's a beat reporter there for the Patriots, suggested that it's not even a lock that he makes the team. You know, when you sort of look at how they're going to put teams together, they think Ramondre Moore-Stevenson can actually play special teams, and that could actually leave Sony Michel out. I think that's an unlikely outcome as I sit here, but that I sort of squint at that and say that's really interesting because I think things could break well for both Ramondre Moore-Stevenson and Damian Harris. So I think that that's, you know, this is focused on veterans, but I think Ramondre Stevenson, I keep going back to that. I don't know why I keep saying that. Ramondre Stevenson is an interesting guy, especially in like the third round of rookie drafts this year, because I think that there's a potential that he could be an injury away. So that's I think one of the really big stories. Joe Mixon also gets a little bit of help. And they go interior offensive line twice in the draft with a guard and a center. They had one of like the worst offensive lines in the interior last year. They actually played decent at tackle, but the interior that offensive line was bad. And he gets some help. Doesn't get any direct threat. They bring in someone late on day three, and they move on from Gio Bernard. And he basically got he's going to get the work until he throws up type treatment. It sounded like old school Bills with that. So he's one that I think I question the upside in terms of some of the talent stuff. And again, I was just looking at some of his stats in terms of his efficiency stuff. It's not great because he has he's not particularly good in terms of his production stats. So he ranked 45th in terms of expected yards last year, but he hasn't really outproduced it. So 44th in terms of rushing yards over expectation, that's out of 55 qualifiers, 40th in terms of yards after contact. And then he ranked 28th in terms of yards per route run amongst those 55 qualifiers for next gen stats. So basically about the middle. And I think the big thing with him coming out was, oh, hey, listen, he's really dynamic and he's a good pass catcher. He's been not dynamic and he's been about an average pass catcher. I think that's a generous description of him. So he's one that I think the narrative can kind of develop on him, but I'm kind of bailing on the talent. You know, is he a top 20 talent? Yeah. Is he going to make like a huge difference? I kind of have some questions, but I think the narratives on him could be friendly here going forward. So all of that's to say, I'm probably still trying to cash out. I'm trying to move up, you know, but it's a couple year tier for him too. That's the other thing you got to think of. You know, if he's going to produce running back 15 type production, like, you're not going to sneeze at that, but let's try and move him from, you know, that to, let's try and move him to Swift, right? Or let's try and move him to Gibson, right? Trying to figure out a way to maybe get a little bit more longevity and a little bit more dynamic running back play. That would sort of be my angle with Joe Mixon. I do want to just highlight, I didn't highlight this before, but the Damien Harris picks. Him for Will Fuller that was actually pre-draft. Just look at some of these ones post-draft. Him for 307, get out of here. That's in, that's is IDP, but still, I mean, come on now. Him, Damien Harris in 201 for 112. Now, if that's like Trey Sermon, I get it. But man, it's a one pick move up. Jeez. That is, again, I get it if there's a specific player in mind, but I think it's interesting. I think a savvy one is Damien Harris in 101. Someone traded 103 and 106 for Damien Harris in 101. I think that's an interesting way to sort of tack him on to the back end of a deal. Damien Harris for Henry Ruggs. Damien Harris in 101 again. For 107, 201, and Julio. So again, those are the kind of deals that one was actually pre-draft. Those are some of the deals that we're kind of seeing with him. I think it's a buying situation. Again, am I going to go out and if it's a second this year, do it. That would be my take on it. Just because I do think that there's some upside here. He graded out pretty well in some of the in the advanced stats too. He performed over expectation. You know, he was up in that category. I think that there's opportunity here for him. So, and Mixon, again, I'm a little bit less optimistic on Mixon. Sort of run down some of the trades on him too. But I think that each one of these guys, and it's interesting, you're getting, I don't know, in a best case scenario for Damien Harris, I don't think he's that much different than Joe Mixon. But look at some of the stuff that Joe Mixon's trading on. Like Joe Mixon in a future first for 103. Now, if that's moving from, I don't typically like to do that type of deal, but if that's moving from Mixon to Harris, like that's pretty interesting. That's kind of an interesting construction if you're sort of doing that. If that's for Ja'Marr Chase or someone like that, we could have a little bit other debate. David Montgomery, 202 and 208 for Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon for 111 and Nyheim Hines. Again, is that like Sermon? Again, those are super flex trades. Is that like Sermon and Hines for Mixon? I don't know. I mean, I like Sermon, but it's interesting that's like the least you can draw from him. One that I'd definitely be on the other side of, Ryan Tannehill and 211 for Joe Mixon. Again, the pick doesn't matter that much. It's super flex, but I kind of like the Tannehill angle to that one a little bit better, and you can use the pick to try and consolidate it. But Joe Mixon for 111, again, he's basically like a late first round valuation. So it's basically essentially running back 4 in this class. That's he's going just slightly ahead of Sermon in these picks. I think that's interesting. You know, Mixon for 108 and 301. Again, if that's Chase, if that's Javonte Williams, you're basically taking you're resetting the clock, and I get that. But I think once you sort of get out of that tier, when you get into the Sermon, Bateman tier, I think Mixon's probably got a better case than those guys do. Mixon in 303 for 104. Again, that's a move. Is that Mixon to ETN? Is that Mixon to Harris? Or quarterback maybe two, something like that. I think that's an interesting pivot. So, yeah. So, I mean, I think all of those all of those are interesting situations there in terms of how to extract from Mixon. So, again, with Mixon, I kind of question some of the talent, but I think the situation's getting better, and I think that he's one that could maybe see an uptick in valuation. Do you want to do that? I'd much rather do that David Montgomery deal, like with the future picks. Like, hey, we'll get a second to a first upgrade, or a second next year, or, you know, something like that. I'd much rather do that deal than the seconds, you know, the later seconds in this class. Lastly, I think the other big story is Chase Edmonds. And this was one that I'm not sure I ever really believed that they were going to be in on the Najee Harris thing, but I kept seeing good, what I would consider smart people suggesting that. And so I was somewhat like, what is the deal with that? And was sort of open to that idea. They pass on running back, and you know, they were never going to come into the season with Chase Edmonds being backed up by DJ Foster and Eno Benjamin. So the fact they add James Conner, like that's fine. Like that's totally fine. And you know what? Ultimately, like he essentially survives. No supreme competition, no superior competition, and you get James Conner in there who, you know, can play, but not overly dynamic. I don't think that he's going to just come in and take Chase Edmonds' job. Chase Edmonds, more dynamic pass catcher, all those things. And there you go. I mean, that's a pretty good situation there for Edmonds. And I think one of the fascinating stories last year was all of his passing game work when Drake essentially did it all the year before. It was a total reversal, and there was nothing to really suggest that was going to happen. I think at worst he's the pass heavy in that game, and you know, is it maybe 50-50 rushes? They've made it pretty clear that they think that he can be the guy, but he hasn't really shown it yet in terms of his ability to stay healthy. I think James Conner's really interesting in that backfield. I think Chase Edmonds really interesting in that backfield. So Edmonds, just some of the deals. Again, any of these deals that are happening, if you're in rookie drafts right now and you can sort of do these deals, I mean, it's there's some lucrative stuff in here. Him for 207 and 309. Again, that's like Kadarius Toney range. 309, maybe that's Ramondre Stevenson. I don't know. Give me Edmonds. Edmonds for 210. Give me Edmonds. Edmonds in 204 for Jordan Love and a future third. That just seems like running scared. So all of these, like, again, in a class, the way that I could be totally misguided on this and totally warped, but the way I see this is very simple. And I posted this on Twitter, and people missed the message, I think, but give me the guys that you think can change your dynasty outcome. And there's not very many of them in this class. There's just not. Three, maybe four running backs. Like at most, there's four. I think Sermon is one of those. He could be one of those. Javonte Williams, Harris, and Etienne. I think Chase, and outside of that, and Pitts, you know, the quarterbacks. Outside of that, I just don't know how there's maybe Bateman. I just don't see from a production perspective it being Waddle or Smith. All of those things together don't trade away someone that can make a big time impact in 2020, one for someone that you don't think is going to make a big impact ever, right? Maybe they're fine in terms of, you know, they're fine in terms of, hey, they'll preserve a little bit of market value, something like that. But I think Edmonds is a guy that can go up in value. If he goes off for a couple of games, like, you can get a future first for him. And are you going to be able to do that for Elijah Moore, for Rondale Moore, you know, for Terrace Marshall? All of those things seem like tough scenarios. So for me, in this class, if you're in that range and you can get a guy that can help you this year, I think that's the play. So if it's Mike Davis, I mean, this is a kind of a running theme for this. Mike Davis, Chase Edmonds, Damian Harris, you know, Mixon isn't that far apart in cost. I think all those are interesting concepts in terms of if you're trying to craft a deal. And it might be hard because I think people are onto this class isn't that great. But you sort of look at all these deals and you can say, hey, listen, I think I'm going to get a year out of this production in a range of the draft where typically that's what you're looking for. If you're drafting in the late second or the I guess mid to, you know, even if it's early to mid or late second, that's a range of the corresponding startup valuation isn't a particularly high hit rate. It's not a particularly dense hit rate. And you're getting a guy who is kind of locked into a job right now, and outside of injury, you don't see a huge threat to. And I don't see a ton of ceiling in that range either. This isn't last year. This isn't an Ayuk year. This isn't an A.J. Dillon year. This isn't that year. So I am much more focused this year on trying to get those pieces in. And that's why I've been aggressive moving up for Sermon where I could. But I think for me, I haven't had a ton of success with it because I think the market's onto it. But all of those things, I mean, that's really where this is coming from in terms of they're not that differently situated and they're not that differently priced. And when you compare them against the fact you're going to go receiver in this class and it's receiver 4, 5, 6, 7, I mean, just the upside of the running back seems like the play to me. So that's really the take on Edmonds. I mean, Edmonds for, 402 and Edmonds for 207. Here's one that I can get on board with. Edmonds in 105 for 102. Again, that's moving up the board. But again, is that moving from, this probably isn't what happened, but is that moving from Etienne to Harris? That's probably would have been my play in that range, but or maybe it's moving to, you know, it's possible that that's a move. It's non tight end premium, so maybe that wasn't for Pitts. But if that's up the board for Lawrence, that might make some sense. But you know, that's basically moving from ETN to Harris, which is interesting. I guess I could debate that one further and sort of kick that one around a little bit more. So all that, I think there's some buying opportunity with these guys. Edmonds is going, Edmonds in 304 for Myles Gaskin, just running down some of these. This is one that I would absolutely take the other side on. Edmonds in 201 for Mike Evans. That's the other side that you take. Someone was able to commit larceny in Superflex, non-tight end premium, trade 105 and Zeke. You get 105 and Zeke for Edmonds and 102. I mean, that's a smash. I don't think you're really doing too much different. Again, is that let's put players to picks for a second. Is that Harris and Edmonds for Etienne and Zeke? That's an easy bet for me. So yeah, that's another interesting one that I saw. Keep looking down these. Him for a future first, I can get on board with that. Him for a future second, him in a future second for 202 in this class, it just is a disaster. That's a disaster unless it's Sermon. So that's basically it. I mean, I think Harris, Edmonds and Davis. I think all of them. And maybe Harris is the least likely to be able to do this with, but I think the other ones, I think there's moments in time where you can get a future first, and I'm going to wait on that. And I think it could build, and I think that trading for a future first right now and for a veteran in this class, like as you're sort of looking at it through the lens of this class, might not be the time to do it. It can be, you know, as we sort of get into the off season more, if there's injuries, if there's, you know, changes, there will be changes, but if there's injuries in training camp and all those things, like that's kind of when that market will turn a little bit. So, and that's kind of when I'd be looking to sort of exploit the market for some of these guys and into the season. And then, yeah. And that's kind of how I would look to get out on these guys. But I think all of them are interesting. You know, I don't want to get over the moon on in terms of cost, but I think all of them are interesting. Hey, can come in and maybe fill a need for you, especially, you know, especially Davis and at a cheap price, Edmonds and that. Again, if it's a slide back and you can acquire one of these guys from a move from like 3 to 6, that's a really interesting opportunity because I don't think you're giving up a ton. So, all right, well, that'll do it for this episode. That's kind of a longer one focused on some veteran running backs here that I think survived the draft. Some other names I think you could think about, like Tevin Coleman's interesting. I don't think Michael Carter's necessarily going to be. He's got to get through Tevin Coleman. He's got to get through Michael Pirine to come in and be the, you know, the day one starter. So he's one that I don't think is totally sideswiped by this draft. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's another one there that I think is an interesting one. Basically, kind of just a throw in value at this point, and there's not much proven there in front of him. So that'll pretty much do it for this episode. Till next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.